6 foot 6 above sea level. I grab the mic because I like to take you to another mental level. Low power frequency radio modulation. The big sound from underground. We bring the truth to places truth is never heard before.
Hello and welcome to A Public Affair. It's Tuesday, so that means you've got me. I'm Carousel Baird. So we are doing something we have never done before. We're doing a three-part series. Three parts, you say, what could be so compelling that would take three exciting shows? I mean, we always talk about exciting, compelling issues, but what we're doing right now is there are five individuals running to be the next mayor of the city of Madison, and we are going to interview all five of them over the course of three shows. Everyone's going to get equal time, and we're going to ask them some questions and get an idea of why they're running for Madison mayor, what they think about the city, what they want to change, what they want to do, all that fabulous stuff. So, here's the quick format. Today, we're going to speak with candidate Bridget Maniacci. Next week, we're going to talk with Paul Soglin and Scott Resnick. And the following week, we're going to talk with Richard Brown and Christopher Daly. That's going to be the lowdown. Tune in today, as you already are. Thank you very much, fabulous listeners. Tune in next week and the following week to help you frame your decision. Because you know what? The week after that, primary is Tuesday, February 17th, with all five individuals in the race on the ballot. And that will be narrowed down to the top two vote-getters, and they will have a runoff that will be on the April 7th ballot. So for the next 3 weeks, we're interviewing all candidates. Let's get it started, shall we?
I'm running
today. We're speaking with Bridget Maniacci. Let me give you a little lowdown on her. She was an alder for the city of Madison for 4 years, elected twice in 2009 and 2011. Before that, she worked in the mayor's office under Mayor Dave Cheslevich in 2006 and 2007 while she was a student at UW. She is a Madison native. Do I have this right? Fifth generation?
Yes.
Fifth generation?
Yes. Look, the parking lot to Whole Foods was my great-great-grandparents'
generation.
Farm.
Generation. I don't know if there's fifth generations of anybody living in the same city.
I know, right?
You love Madison.
We love Madison. I love Madison.
I'm going to say that right there. All right. And you just received your master's in public policy and management from Carnegie Mellon University.
Yes, that is correct.
Congratulations on that. So, and we'll see if this comes into the conversation. Maybe it does. Bridget Maniacci, I don't know if you know this, but you're the only female in the race of five.
Imagine that.
I like the women.
Yeah. Well, and you know, most women, the reason the gap exists is because they don't run. Because American University and Rutgers have a lot of research going on about women in leadership. And they find that it's not that women are less successful. It's not that they can't fundraise. It's that they're not encouraged to step up and run.
When women run,
yes.
Women win.
Yes.
So
I like to think
you're
so.
Hoping that I'm hoping. Will be your odds.
So, I'm hoping.
Bridget, tell us a little bit about why you're running for the mayor of the city of Madison.
Well, as you sort of gave a fabulous intro here, I love Madison. I also am a huge geek for the city and city issues, and I stepped away from the council seat to really gear up and be prepared for this job because I've seen it up close and personal working for a year in the mayor's office. And it's not just all ribbon cuttings and getting to meet the Dalai Lama. You know,
I got to meet the Dalai Lama.
It was fantastic.
Man.
Yeah. I got to take pictures of Dave
cool.
and the Dalai Lama as he got off the airplane, like on the tarmac out at the airport. It was pretty rad. So I'm running for mayor because I'm not seeing a lot happening in City Hall right now. And if you're frustrated, if you want to see change, you got to step up and run. One thing also, I mean, it's really, the mayor should be there really working to help people, that everyday citizen, and the issues that directly affect them and make sure that City Hall is working for them. And what I've seen over the last 4 years is really it's a lot of petty internal fights. And there's a lot of talk and there's a lot of grandstanding, but I'm not seeing really good, practical, pragmatic solutions being put forward on the table. And I don't see how having Paul in office for another 4 years is going to move the city forward. If you look at all the issues we're having about homelessness and poverty, and I mean, I had Salvation Army in my district, and Carousel, you and I, we've talked, especially with Occupy Madison and about, I had the homeless day resource center in my district the first first year and across the street the second year. And really what I saw coming out of the mayor's office was very disappointing to me in how that whole situation was handled. And so I don't think that there's enough action happening right now. And it's a lot of good talk, but we've got to get results. And I had folks spilling off and over on the sidewalk down at the Women and Children's Shelter at Salvation Army because we do not have housing in the city. So I think it's time to step up and see new leadership. I think there's a very polite way that you can say, Paul, thank you for your years of dedication to public service to the city of Madison, but now it's time for new leadership to step up. And, you know, the city's changing and the things that have worked in the past are not going to work moving forward in the future.
What do you think are sort of the shortcomings?
The big issues. Yeah.
The big issue. Yeah. I mean, you can, I'm trying to take what you just said and you can spin it either way. You know, tell me then how you're going to have action that you see isn't happening. What sort of the steps that you would do differently? What's your leadership?
I think relationships are really, really strained right now. And if you look at the situation with the city council coming out of the budget, you look at how there's very strained relations between Joe Parisi and Mayor Soglin, how we don't seem to have, yet again, a homeless day shelter solution. We had to sort of, you know, come up with extra funds to put towards existing service providers. I think that that's a classic example of how things aren't working. When I was on the council, you know, I had to represent a district that was incredibly diverse. I had frats and sororities. I had million-dollar lakefront mansions. I had the Women and Children's Shelter, all within blocks of each other. And so I have been very successful at being able to work across a lot of different groups. Right now, I'm not seeing the next sort of 30-year resident stepping up and participating in city government. I'm not seeing them at the neighborhood association level. Young families and parents with children, I'm not seeing actively engaged. And one thing I'm very much frustrated by, them, you know, when I took a step back from the council to look at the city as a whole and where sort of our Achilles heels are and kind of lift up the hood and, you know, kick the tires, I mean, we have these issues of structural poverty, and we have siloed away and we have pushed off to where it's politically expedient, affordable housing. We are not a diverse city, whether it's on racial, you know, racial background, whether it's on, you know, how much money and how much income you have. And it's really about how we've built our neighborhoods. And I think that that's the 40-year legacy of Paul as mayor. I mean, don't tell me that, you know, he's going to solve the problems when he's been one of the really consistent constants over 40 years in leadership in City Hall. And so I think it's really important to bring in folks with a different set of perspectives of how we can be more dynamic, how we can work in a more public-private partnership between service providers, between nonprofits, between, you know, the business community and government. And getting out of here for a year and going to a city like Pittsburgh, it was amazing to me to see the resources that they have there as they work together, because they have such an established base of partnerships between government and private sector and nonprofits. That was very long.
I know. No, that's great and very thorough, and that's why we... That's why I love this radio show. Yeah. This isn't about sound bites. I don't want 30-second answers. Our listeners want 2-minute answers.
Good.
That's why we're listening.
I'm so happy about that, because, you know, I was showing something that I was working on for the campaign to my father, and he said, Bridget, nobody voted for Bill Clinton because he was a policy wonk. Everybody voted for him because he played the saxophone on late night television. And so I'm sort
of... Where's your saxophone?
I know, I'll have to figure out what my tap dance routine will be. you know, and that's the thing, is I think it's important to have somebody running who can do the job and can keep things light and fun, but then really be able to dig in on the issues. And
this is a serious job.
This is an incredibly serious job. This job never ends. This, like, you know, I don't know if you want to go down the path of the, you know, the Hillary Clinton, like, 3 a.m. phone call, but I mean, it is. It's a lot of 3 a.m. phone calls. Of
you're in charge of a city.
You're in charge of a city. And, you know, I think I'm in a very good point in my life to be able to take this on. You know, it's important to have the capacity to sort of give it your all. And I definitely sort of my life is at that point. And, you know, Paul was 27 when he was elected. Joe Sensenbrenner was 34 when he was elected mayor. And I'm 31. So I'm really right in that wheelhouse of where you want to have somebody who has energy and fresh ideas, but then also has a background and experience. And I started in City Hall a decade ago, 10 years ago. I started as a journalist, covering, you know, committee assignments, and came in and worked as a press intern under Dave, and worked and saw, well, I booked 9 of the 10 bands for that first year of Freak Fest with no money, right? You want to talk about, you know, fiscally responsible initiatives. And then I decided to run for city council. So I love the fact that I go out and I'm like, I went out for a business lunch with somebody who works at MATC. We were talking about the campaign, and we go to order, and it's Ale Asylum. So we order a beer, and I get carded to, you know, so it's, you know, there's something to be always said about, I'm out here working to try to be the best, most professional, cutting edge mayor possible. And it's very interesting how frequently sort of age and gender sort of rear its head. And I'm trying very hard to be myself and be colorful and be enthusiastic, and sort of not get down and not dress in all black all the time. But there is something to be said for trying to sort of find that voice in leadership to be yourself and see other and have other people see that in a way that doesn't hurt you, because it's hard sometimes. I've had people say, like, at meetings about, like, what color, you know, they don't like what shirt I'm wearing at a public meeting. I've actually had, you know, that happen, where people come up and make comments about what I'm wearing. And it's like you want to be there. You want to be talking about the issues. You want to be focusing on the task at hand. And it's amazing to me how very frequently it can skew away from that. So...
Well, let's talk about some of the tasks at hand.
Let's talk about
a lot of the questions that I have mirror many of the points that you just said, which is, you know, an excellent segue between the two. So let's start focusing on some of the ideas. First one, I wanted to ask about the racial differences we have in Madison that you just talked about, that we're not very diverse. You talked about economically and racially. So let's focus on racially a little bit.
Sure.
Our neighborhoods overall are racially divided.
Completely.
And Dane County has one of the worst racial incarceration disproportionate rates in the country.
Yep.
And a large percentage of the individuals in Dane County Jail have been put there by Madison police officers.
Yes.
So how do you address that issue as Madison mayor?
Well, I think, you know, if you look at the neighborhoods, and people like to live around people who are like them. And we've built neighborhoods that you drive down the streets and the houses are all matchy-matchy. Right. And you might go down.
Is that a Madison thing? Is that an everywhere thing?
It's not an everywhere thing. I think it has a lot to do with, and there's parts of Madison that are not. My district was kind of that Jane Jacobs sidewalk ballet where you had a huge mix of stuff. But if you look at a lot of the city that was all built sort of post-World War II, you get a lot of that. You get that more suburban, urban grid model. And then over, I would say, in the last 15 years, especially as a lot of neighborhoods that used to be working class and diverse have really appreciated, you know, the Marquette neighborhood is a great example of that. It's now the third highest income census block in the city. Number one is Nakoma. Number two is University Heights. Number three is Marquette. And if you look at those houses, you know, 20 years ago, when 25 years ago, folks might have paid $75,000, $80,000 for a little cottage that now is probably in that neighborhood going for $200,000, $220,000. So a lot of the city has issues with just income and where housing is available. And when our housing capacity is so strained right now, and talking with folks over the holidays, I mean, Epic's on par to add another 3,000 employees in 2015. So you look at the chaos that is kind of happening right now in the housing market, and it's only exacerbating the issues that we have about being divided and segregated. And it's about income. It's about race. So I was at the Northside Planning Council put on an event last night about racial issues on the Northside. And it was really interesting, very fascinating. I know they're going to have more events. to have people talk about the story. So that's the other thing. And a big point that people kept coming back to is a lot of folks in the city just don't see racial inequity because in their everyday lives, they are not around people who are diverse from them. It has to do with, you know, how you get to work. It has to do with sort of where you work and what the, you know, makeup is of the employee base there. And it has a lot to do also with, you know, how do your children interact? There was a parent last night who was talking about she moved from the south side to the north side, bought a house. There were kids in the neighborhood, but her little girl had nobody to play with. So there's a lot of work to do.
So only to echo back on what you were saying at the beginning, talking about I'll talk and we need action.
Yeah.
I appreciate everything that you said.
Yeah. All right.
I'm
so
not
action.
Trying to challenge any of that. But so now you're Madison mayor, let's say.
Yeah.
What are you going to do?
I think number one is we got to start with the kids, start with the youth. I'm really frustrated right now by what I see with the school district of opportunities for volunteers to get involved. And I don't see a lot of sort of civic engagement between sort of City Hall and MMSD. I've had stories of retired teachers who are like specially trained, special, you know, like speech therapy type teachers going into their local schools and saying, hey, I'll come volunteer. And the principal at that school says, oh, no, that's okay. There's nobody out there right now asking all these young millennials who are putting off having kids, like, hey, would you like to come volunteer? Would you like to come help out? So I think that there's a lot of opportunities because we have to get to a point where we're interacting with people who are different than us. I think that's step one. And it's, I don't have to build big infrastructure to do that. I think that's about bringing people together when you have the microphone as mayor. The PTO groups do not really interact with the neighborhood association groups. I've seen this firsthand in my district. I've reached out to neighborhood association presidents and asked what's their interaction with like the PTO groups. And it's very few and far between.
And that's has racial implications?
If you look at the schools and the makeups, frequently the neighborhoods around the schools and the makeups of the kids in the schools are very different because the district buses kids and kids are coming from all over. There are some schools like Lapham and Marquette where they're paired and it's more of a neighborhood-focused system. But there's many neighborhoods that that's not the case. So I think that's an easy step forward. The other thing that we have to look at, and I, on my website today, I launched a bunch of issues. You can go take a look. The city needs to proactively step up on affordable housing and building affordable housing. If we do not open that financial barrier to people to have access to other neighborhoods, there's no way we can start to sort of diversify our neighborhoods on a racial background, on a socioeconomic background. It's just we've completely priced out so many people who...
Let's transition a little bit to housing. How do you address that with things that you have mentioned, talking about diversified neighborhoods and affordability of neighborhoods? And also you've mentioned Epic hiring new people.
Yeah.
And you want to, how do you support both at the same time? Do you support both at the same time?
Well, I can't tell Epic how to run their company. They're going to do what they're going to do.
Well, you don't want, do you?
But wait, Epic, Epic is...
Do you have any thoughts on them hiring then?
Is
that
great.
A good thing?
I think it's great. But what we need to do...
I was presuming it was, but I hadn't thought otherwise.
Yeah. But we need to make sure that we're leveraging their, like, sort of cotton candy, like, really hot, quick growth that's happening and leverage it into a more stable... More stable industries and more stable companies.
So I'm working on that imagery. Cotton candy.
Like, you know, like...
It sort of grows.
Yeah. Oh, it's okay. Like really fast.
Okay,
really,
okay.
Really,
okay. Okay.
You know, there's not a lot. It's just, you know, it's really quick. It's
thin and fast.
Thin and fast.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And I've had friends, roommates work for Epic and, you know, folks come in and then they leave 18 months later. And it's just kind of a cycle, right? So Epic's growth is doing good things for our economy and for our city. That also has a lot of sort of instability that's being created in the housing market. The reality is we have to step up and build housing. I very much believe that there's a workable model looking at the city's capital budget funds, not our operating, but our capital budget funds, to partner with developers in the high rent districts to build units that are affordable. This is a voluntary thing. It's you give bulk and height allowances like we have already on the books for Urban Design District 8, which is my old district on the Capital East corridor. Part of the, you know, Otto Gephardt's project, he has 20% of his units are at that 50-60% county median income, like the Section 42 affordable housing level. So the Constellation, 20% of their units, because of the tax credits they got, are there. Now, you know, they're not blasting that across their for rent page, right, and very loudly. But there's, so there's, you know, on that point where I've seen that, where there is affordable housing, but the landlords are kind of quiet about it, I think it's important that the cities step up and make sure that there's a central resource of apartment hunting so that you have access and you know where those houses are and those apartments across the city. I think that we can really step up on SROs. We can step up on, and we have families. Yes, yes. Because the reality is of the 3,000 folks about every year, well, 3,300, who are using our shelters, it's sort of a opposite ends of the spectrum. We have a lot of single childless adults, and then we have a lot of children and families. And so those require very different housing strategies to be able to address those needs.
And you think right now the city's strategies aren't diversified?
Yeah, and there's not much actually happening. And I'm frustrated a bit. I know it's a good first step to get that SRO that the county and the city has partnered on. My concern, though, is it's you know, it's behind Geisha House and the porn store. I'm really concerned that we don't continue to go down the path where we just build affordable housing where it's politically expedient, that we're ensuring that we're building affordable housing in the high rent neighborhoods, in a diversity of neighborhoods. And if you look at parts of the city, that's going to be very difficult. I don't know where you go into like the Westmoreland neighborhood and build even 40 units of family housing.
So how do you work with the neighborhood associations?
Yeah, well, you show up, you talk with them, you get a sense of what their boundaries of comfort are, and that can be a very emotional process. I've seen it firsthand downtown, but Tenney Lapham's the kind of neighborhood where you have a whole mix of folks. You look at other parts of the city, and you have residents who kind of just want what they want, and you can't necessarily fault them for that, but you have to work through and say, but guys, there's bigger priorities, and we have to look at the whole city approach. So I think that you have to work with the alders and you have to have real conversations. And I think it's very hard for a lot of folks who are homeowners to understand what's going on right now with the rental market. I've had a number of folks when I've been out knocking doors say, so when are these apartments going to be, or like, when are they going to stop building apartments downtown? And I mean, the simple answer is we're not. We're nowhere near reaching what we need. We're nowhere near having anywhere close to a market saturation point. You start to see rents fall when you hit around about a 10% vacancy rate.
Except you just said something which I thought, yeah, I've never heard before, and
okay,
I actually really like it for the thoughts that it's creating in my head, which is acknowledging that the Epic community in particular comes and goes.
Yeah.
Are we spending too much time building and developing and shaping parts of Madison for a community that disappears in a little bit? Or does that mean we need to build housing for them and we need to build more so that two
right.
years from now when they're done with their Epic job, they don't leave? Are we,
right. Well, and so the thing is like, if one individual, like say either of my two roommates, right, who have now left Epic, right, somebody else took their place. So it's not like Epic is losing people. They keep gaining people.
Yes.
And they're going to continue to keep gaining people. And they just bid on the DOD and the VA contracts, and they partnered with IBM. How many, they should hear back this spring, how many more thousands of employees on top of the 3,000 that they're already planning for 2015 is that going to be?
And we only have a few more minutes, so I don't want to get caught in the weeds here.
I know. Go to the website.
So, right.
I should say bridgetformadison.com, right?
Okay. So, what else in the last few minutes here? Yeah. What else do you want to cover? I mean, we can talk about anything. Do you want to talk a little bit about Madison Metro?
Yeah. Well, that's that. I'll totally fall down the rabbit hole. Yeah.
Okay.
So I just got my master's in out of Carnegie Mellon, did my thesis work in predictive traveler information systems, and there's so much cool stuff coming that Madison's not looking at that we should be.
Like what?
Like having an easy go-to app to see how many parking spots are available in both the public and private ramps before you leave your house. There's really simple ways that we can do that and have the data streams. Things like knowing when the snowplow is going to get to your house. So not like where the snowplow is right now, but where the snowplow, like when will it get to your house? There's a lot of really dynamic things that can help citizens in their everyday lives with technology, some of it around transit, some around it, of it around, you know, basic services, that I have a lot of ideas on. What
about
GPS, GPS for your bike, right? We're supposed to be charging and get everybody's bikes licensed, but there's
GPS
the square.
For your bike.
Yeah, so like if
you mean,
like
directions.
Well, no, so like say your bike gets swiped and you have a little GPS chip on your bike.
Oh, you can find where
your bike is.
Like when my phone is under my bed.
Exactly.
I see. Okay.
Exactly. So, you know, there's a company Square, and you can get a little thing. It's about an inch by an inch, and you put it on your keychain or other objects. Mm-hmm. And so I'm very interested in what you could do in something like that for, say, your dog or your bicycle. Because
so the idea of integrating technology to help make lives easier and more efficient in the city of Madison.
And in a way that protects your privacy, because that's one thing. And I think I differ a lot from Scott on looking at body cameras and technology. I've seen the crazy future of tomorrow today coming down the pipeline, you know, and facial recognition software and all kinds of things, right? So I'm very sensitive about how we're bringing this technology online at City Hall that does not trump your right to privacy, especially for folks who are very vulnerable, whether it's, you know, domestic abuse victims or folks, you know, stalking. There's a situation like with the open data ordinance in the city. I think the treasurer's office is having a hell of a time trying to not give somebody else's contact information because of our open data ordinance that just got passed. So those
be thoughtful when we pass this legislation.
Yes.
We're going to have to leave it there for today.
I know we could go for an hour.
We could, but then we would.
But then
have
at equal
to,
time.
Then right.
Yes.
Then we would have to have this show about the mayor's race forever.
Forever.
And I love the mayor's race, but I love so many other things too.
I know, and there's so much to talk about.
There is, and
we need
gonna
so
get,
much more time.
We're gonna
than
get
2 weeks.
Well, that's why we're gonna talk a little bit about our forum and have all that.
I'm very excited for
Bridget
the forum.
Bridget Maniachi, candidate for mayor of Madison. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for
having
me.
Thank you for kicking off our series. Thank you for your enthusiasm and energy. And I wish you
and
best
a good,
of luck
and a good radio voice, right?
Oh, always. Hey, I'm the other one talking. Everyone sounds good next to me, so it's perfect. It's perfect.
Thanks so much, Carousel.
Thank you, Bridget. So that was Bridget Maniachi, our first candidate that we're going to interview, our first of five that we're talking about the race for the city of Madison mayor.